This is Rob, your host of Movie Geek and Proud, and we are back with another episode. This is a special one because we welcome a newcomer to the roundtable. This is his first time on the podcast. I'm here with Vincent. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic.
You hear that Barry White voice going on right now?
I'm doing it just so you guys can really soak it all in.
And also back with us is Noah.
Here with my Barry White voice.
It's on the same note.
Mm-hmm.
How are you gentlemen today?
Couldn't complain if I tried, honestly.
I'm excited to talk about Sister Act 2.
Yes. In the habit.
We are going back to 1993 with Sister Act 2. Now, in our first year, Noah, Sean, and I covered Sister Act 1. And with Vincent's first time on the show, I asked him, what movie would he like to debut on Movie Geek and Proud? Immediately, Sister Act 2.
Didn't hesitate.
But before we get to that, let's get to know Vincent a little bit. With every newcomer to the show, we always ask the Movie Geek and Proud questions. First, what is your favorite movie?
Ooh, I have to go with Devil's Wear Prada, actually.
Nice.
Devil Wears Prada.
Now, why Devil Wears Prada?
I think it was just a great mix of just a hilarious storyline, fashion, which, I mean, who doesn't love some good fashion? And then just Meryl Streep. I mean, Meryl Streep in anything, I'm like in love with it. And she just was an amazing person and just personified everything that character was and just made me hate her, which made me love her even more.
Did you happen to read the book?
I did not.
I didn't either, but I hear it's a great book. I didn't know it was based on a book when it came out, but
I actually did read the book. It was good, yeah.
Now, did Meryl do anything different about her character in regards to how the book portrayed her, or do you think it was pretty accurate?
I think it was pretty accurate. I mean, honestly, it was 10 years ago mm-hmm. that I read probably more than that, I read the book, so it's hard to remember now. But no, I think the story, from what I remember, was pretty, you know, it followed the book pretty closely.
Nice. Well, she nailed it. No, that's a great choice. So then, second question, how about a movie that you're proud of, despite global hate or maybe circle of friends give you shit for?
Ah, man. And it's funny because you asked me this. And it took me a while to think through what it could be. But Constantine, I remember liking that movie. And I remember everyone at the time hated it. Just did not understand why I was so in love with Constantine. But I really like that movie.
Constantine. I'll tell you this. I've only watched it once. It does deserve a rewatch. I don't know if my mind will change, but I could not stand it. Mm. I could not stand it. It was weird. And all he did was cry all the time and just whine about his gifts. It was just bugging me. I don't know what it was. I don't know. Tilda Swinton, even though she's Tilda, still was giving me like weird vibes. I don't know. There's something about it, but I love the fact that you're proud of it. So that's what I want
to
hear.
With emotions. I don't know what it is. You got emotions. I'm like, come here, guy. Let me fix you.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, Vincent. Thank you. Thanks for coming. And so we are going to do Sister Act 2. But of course, I have segments. Every time I like to hear from my listeners. And so we have a question of the week, a little related to the movie that we are doing today. And the question is,
question,
who is your favorite musical artist turn actor in a film? So I'm just going to read off a couple of answers that I got. I want you to watch this podcast on Twitter says Queen Latifah.
Mm.
And specifically, yes.
I had a feeling.
No,
that's my number two choice, actually. That's actually my number two.
No, very good.
Hope
yeah.
It's number one.
Undead Daisy Pusher on Twitter said he had a list, actually. Sting, David Bowie, Grace Jones, and Steve Van Zandt. Yeah. The Cinema Guys podcast said Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good one. Steven at Walking by 87 said Beyonce, specifically using a gif of Austin Powers' Gold Member, which I actually really enjoyed her in Gold Member. I thought she was great. I thought she was great.
Good role for her.
Yeah, it was. No, I agree. Thanks for coming, podcast. Also said David Bowie, specifically using Labyrinth as an example. We're the Realist and the Horror podcast also said, well, not also, but said Cher.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. Tom said Bob Geldof in Pink Floyd, The Wall. I don't know. I've never seen that movie, but I know of that. Let's see. Munson at the movies said Mr. Funky Bunch himself, Marky Mark.
Oh, man.
He did do like music before.
I do like me some underwear.
Mark Skelfox, or Stelfox said Lady Gaga, specifically using A Star Is Born as an example. There were a lot of other answers on here that were really good. Most of these are pretty gay, but I still love the fact that they, you know, picked a lot of great artists. Ryan Alteri also said Barbara Streisand. So, Noah, who did you choose?
Well, speaking of gay answers, I'm going with Bette Midler. You know, now that someone mentioned Beyonce, that might have to take it because Dreamgirls is one of my favorite movies of all time. Mm-hmm. But Bette Midler is, you know, she's great in everything, and she's hilarious, and she was the original choice to star in Sister Act. So there you go.
Yes. Really? Yeah, we talked about this during the first recording. Bette Midler passed up this role to do, I forget. Was it Hocus? No. She passed up Misery for Hocus. This is what it was. I think she either just didn't want to be typecast, or she thought it was weird to have a singer be a nun.
I don't know if it was for another role, but she
didn't like sort of the idea of a nun being in there. But yeah, Bette Midler was supposed to do Whippy's part.
That would change the entire...
Wouldn't it, though?
Yeah.
See, the other thing that I wanted to answer was Diana Ross, because I love Diana Ross.
Yes.
However, I've never actually seen Mahogany or Lady Sings the Blues.
I have not either.
And so I feel like I can't really say that, and I guess I'm clearly not enough of a Diana Ross fan. And the only movie of hers I did see was The Wiz, which we don't need to get into.
Ease on down.
Yeah.
How about you, Vincent? Who is your favorite artist turned actor?
Like, as you started reading your Twitter answers, I got kind of nervous. You literally said my number 2 and 3. But number one,
which is fine,
is like super butch, super straight. But Ice Cube from Friday 2.
That's actually a really good answer.
Like, oh, I was like, Ice Cube.
That's actually a really good answer. Usually when you hear a question like this, you don't normally think of males. And I actually really like that answer. Anaconda, I think, was one of the first times I ever saw him act, and I thought he was brilliant. So, no, that's a really good answer. I like that.
It sounds really butch, but just for the record, not really butch at all.
I actually chose Janelle Monáe. I think she is killing it right now. Every movie she's been in, Hidden Figures, Moonlight, and then this Antebellum that's been out. She just blows me away with her acting. I think she is just awesome, and I hope she continues to act because I just think she's great at it, and she killed it at the Oscars. I don't know if you guys saw her opening performance at the Oscars.
I did not.
Oh, it was so good. So good. So yeah, hopefully she keeps doing that more. But thank you, Twitterverse, for all of your answers. We really appreciate that. I love hearing from all of you guys. So we'll definitely have another question come up very soon. Okay, so today's movie, we are doing Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit. This originally premiered December 10th, 1993. I believe this was just 1 year after Sister Act, the first one. According to IMDb, this movie is about a showgirl, Dolores Van Cartier, played by Whoopi Goldberg, returns as Sister Mary Clarence to teach music to a group of Catholic students whose rundown school is slated for closure. This is directed by Bill Duke. Writers include Paul Rudnick, Joseph Howard, James Orr, starring Whoopi Goldberg, Kathy and Jimmy, Maggie Smith, along with a huge cast. Its budget was at $38 million estimated, while an opening weekend just went a little over $7.5 million. Yeah, gross USA, $57 million, so it did make its profit, and then worldwide was just about the same. You mentioned the Rotten Tomatoes percent.
Yes.
How much was that?
It's 7%.
7% from critics, though. But from critics.
Yeah.
Audiences, what do you think is the number for audiences? What do you think the audience thinks of Sister Act 2? Fuck them critics.
I'd say like 60%.
Very close, very close. What about you?
61, because I saw.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so it was 61%. IMDb has a current score, as far as this recording goes today, 5.6 out of 10. Now, I didn't know the movie was received so poorly.
Oh, I did.
When I was a child, I mean, this is just one of those movies. This is one of those movies where it sticks to me because when I saw it at the theater, I saw it with my family and I was with all my cousins. This was like the time where we sat away from the grown-ups and, you know, we sat, you know, like in a few rows up, you know, away from the adults or whatever, and all the music and everything just, yeah. So I remember fondly of this quite well, but I don't remember it receiving such bad reviews. I mean, obviously, I didn't pay attention to stuff like that back in 93. But when was the last time you guys watched Sister Act 2?
For me, it was when it came out. I watched it, and I didn't like it when I first saw it, and I didn't like it today.
So, Noah, why the fuck are you here to play? No, Vince, when was the last time you watched this? This is your choice. Like, what made you choose this movie?
Yeah, so I probably watched it about 10 years ago. I want to say I probably was in college last time I saw it, but the fond memories come back when I was a young kid in the mid-90s. And so I remember watching around the holidays, and I remember being similar to what you said around the families, and it being this movie where both the adults and the kids all like the same movie. And I remember just loving the music. I remember loving the general premise of the movie of like somebody down, kind of like in a bad situation and coming back, and then, you know, accomplishing this big thing, which is a simple premise. And by the way, growing up in Oklahoma, like I think about social issues and I think about like how things are portrayed or how people like interact with like social issues. I saw a lot of problems with it today, too. I was like, oh, shit, I missed a lot of things as a kid. Because there were just, like, these jumps they were making from, like, oh, you're sleeping in class, you have a job? Well, not on my watch. You wake up. I'm like, but if he has a job at night and he has a reason for being asleep in class, shouldn't that be more of a issue to think about versus just waking up? Like, he's not sleeping because he's just tired for no reason. He actually said he worked last night. So it was things like that. I'm like, that did not really sit right with me at all. And then, like, some of the language they were using, they were like, it seemed like someone wrote it. Like, yeah, yo, I want to, like, have fun. Yo, yeah. She believes in us. And I was like,
oh, God.
Oh, God, no, it's not that easy. Why are you just converting so quickly with, okay, we're going to save, now we're going to save the school, yo. They can't shut us down. I was like, you went from this gangster hard, thug, I'm doing whatever I want to do, to, like, I'm not going to get an F or I'll get in trouble. So I'm going to stay in this class. It was just a lot of those, like, weird jumps. I'm like, okay, but I will say I still stand by the music. The music in this fucking film is phenomenal, and I liked every song that I heard again.
The music is great. I mean, the soundtrack definitely carries this movie on to, like, remind us of the film, because I don't think without this music, this movie would be remembered as well. But in comparison to the first one, Noah, you're a big fan of the first one.
I really liked the first one. When I was a kid, we used to watch the first one. We had the VHS. We watched it all the time. And here's the thing about the first one. It's actually funny. Like, the first one, the humor comes out of it being it's a fish out of water. It's these old women who are singing, you know, kind of, you know.
Risque.
Yeah, it's them doing, like, pop music, and that's what made it entertaining. And this movie had none of that. It was just kind of her teaching these ragamuffin kids. And, you know, it was, I mean, to me, the second one is just as cliche as you can possibly get.
Well, I mean, yeah. Just think about it. I mean, I wish I had some dates written down, but just think about, like, all of those movies in those inner city schools, like Stand and Deliver, Dangerous Minds, you know, things like that. This obviously was a platform for them to do it again, but in a more sort of whimsical sort of, I shouldn't say childish, but just more of a PG way, right?
Yeah.
They didn't really deal with heavy issues. You know, the biggest concern was like, your daddy died trying to sing, so I'm not gonna have you sing. I mean, that was first word problems, right, in this movie. But of course the school was closing and all of that. But yeah, I wanted to ask you guys about the plot. We all wanted Whoopi to come back and do this out of nowhere, like, oh, she's putting on a habit, she has to pretend to be a nun. We wanted more of that, but what could they have done with a sequel, but cater it and target younger kids. I mean, the first one clearly was for the older generation. We needed to reach the teenage audience somehow, right? But what did you guys think of sort of this follow-up? You mentioned as they were like getting like meeting at her, you know, her show in Vegas and then asking her to come back, and it was just reminder of like, you helped us, so we want you to help others. So, I mean, what do you think of like this follow-up plot that was given?
I mean, the plot in itself, like holistically, I think is okay. I think just the way they went about it was kind of problematic. Like I could like, because again, with movies, you have to suspend your disbelief to a certain degree about anything, right? So I could agree that, you know, movie one, they literally saved her life. So she owes them a lot. So I could agree that, hey, you suspend your career to come down here and help us out for a little bit. I can almost agree to that point. But it's when like they got the kids and then it just went from this like, we're these troubled kids and this bird course going to fly through things to just, I'm going to be firm with you as a black woman and now you're going to listen to me. And it's like, okay, we're going to do it. There was like no really addressing of like their true issues as kids. No issue, no real explanation of why the school isn't getting money anymore. And then like kind of what we talked about with the main character, Lauryn Hill's character, her biggest problem with her parents was that her dad died because while he was trying to be a musician, and that was the issue. Wasn't pregnant, wasn't on drugs, didn't have bad grades. I mean, they could have.
As far as we know, we know is that he died. So I don't know. She's the mom.
Well,
was,
he was singing.
Yeah.
So you know.
I mean, the mom was clearly just very bitter about the way her husband carried on about his dreams and didn't like. I don't know. Maybe he died and left her with nothing. Who knows? But she obviously is carrying that weight onto, you know, her kid.
Well, just to go back to kind of the basic premise of the movie and the basic plot is, to me, it did not make any sense as to why she's pretending to be a nun again. Because at the end of the first movie, they establish she's on the cover of all these magazines. She has a show in Las Vegas. It became this big national news story that she was hiding out in a convent. So it makes no sense at all that these people who work within the same church had no idea that this woman wasn't really a nun. Like, there was no reason for her to pose as a nun again. She could still come back as Dolores Van Cartier and teach these kids.
So the
plot as a whole made no sense.
I wish they had explained why this Catholic school only could employ nuns to be teachers in this school. Because that's the only thing I can think of is that it's a religious thing. And even the subject matter had nothing to do with the Catholic faith. No. So it's just music. Choice. So, yeah. I mean, that is something that definitely. But I mean, we wanted to see her in The Habit. That's the whole thing. And
but
so,
I think if they had come up with something plausible or clever, but this was just, hey, we're going to put you back in The Habit for no reason at all. I mean, in the first one, there was a reason because she was hiding out from the mobsters.
Yeah.
In this one, it just didn't make sense.
And I'd even say, too, like, even the premise, and maybe this is just me being way too, like, deep and thinking, like, about how we, like, represent individuals, but there was really no need for the kids to be, like, in a troubled situation or in a bad place. Like, it could have almost been a premise of this is a choir that they were a choir and kind of lost their way.
They just don't have the resources.
And needed, someone to guide them again. But, like, to go from, like, this class of just, we're in a music class and we were here to just fly by to now we're going to be a choir to then winning the state competition, to go from that so quickly, it made it hard to, like, really believe in. And then, like, again, it seemed like the way they built it was, this is a really troubled school. They never really quite said that specifically, but it was built around that premise. But it's like they never really paid off other than we can sing and that's how we get through things. It's just like, I don't know, just gonna put these kids in a weird light without really giving any.
The stakes
payoff.
Weren't high at all. I mean, this movie, I think, was just kind of made to be fun and just sort of celebrate music and whatnot. Aside from the plot holes that we got in this movie, the one thing that I didn't really like about this plot is the fact that it was sort of a deja vu of the first one. You know, it started out with this big number of Whoopi Goldberg, which is fine. I love the opening number. I think it's, you know, I'm singing along to it the minute you push play. I was just like, oh, I remember all these words. But it's just like these Whoopi, you know, comes in and she has to teach these kids. And what do you know? She wants to turn them into a choir. Oh, it's a bunch of kids who can't sing technically together. So it's literally the same thing. And then we get to the chase. You know, they're chasing her, you know, making sure they get to her before, you know, she... And there was just a lot of things that kept repeating itself from the first one. And it's like, we get it. But again, because it stars all these little kids, it makes it, I guess, different enough to qualify for a sequel.
Well, and speaking of the kids, I mean, I totally agree that they made no attempt to show any actual problems in their lives. They're just, you know, they like to fall asleep in class. But then when Whoopi Goldberg's character comes in the classroom, keep in mind, this is a woman from Las Vegas who is running around with her murdering gangster boyfriend, and she walks into this class, and she's, like, scared of these kids, and she's like, what am I gonna do? And I'm thinking, like, what did you do when you watched your boyfriend shoot someone? Like, these little 15-year-old snot-nosed kids are frightening you? I don't think so. And don't even get me started on that kid, Frank A. He drove me nuts.
Frank A was problematic appropriation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just really bad.
Frankly, I didn't really like any of the kids except that Amal kid, I think his name was. I liked him. These other kids, I could take or leave.
Based on our question of the week, we obviously have a couple of artists in the movie that have decided to kind of do some acting. What did you guys think of Lauryn Hill's acting in this?
Okay, man, I'm going to get shot for this. But, I mean, her acting wasn't, like, phenomenal, but I don't think it was her fault as much as, like, the script she was given. Now that I look at it as an adult, I'm like, man, these lines are horrible. But I mean, for what she was given, I like what she did. I still feel like I felt her heart. Okay, you know what? I'll take that back. When her and her mom, the dynamics of her mom, like, I felt that. Like, it even though it was, like, shitty lines and it was a shitty reason, but just the way in which they played off each other, there was some real energy.
No, I felt that, too. I mean, I wrote down, Shirley Ralph is, like, a true black mother in every way. Absolutely. Like, everything that came out of her mouth is a black mother. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I love Shirley Ralph.
Yes,
and amazing. Shirley Ralph is the original Dina Jones from Dreamgirls.
Yes.
I was thinking that.
Yes. Of course that's why she was chosen. Yeah.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah. Other things. So, like, Ryan Toby, he is a singer-songwriter. I believe that was Amal.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken. He decided
City
to do
High.
This.
City High. They're the group City High.
Yeah.
What would you do if your son was at home crying all alone?
Yeah. Jennifer Love Hewitt, this was her first movie.
Which is wild.
Well, I mean, she did some TV, obviously. You know, she was in Mickey Mouse Club, and she did Kids Incorporated. Oh, no, not Mickey Mouse Club. She did Kids Incorporated. My bad. And, yeah, so, yeah, but this was her first movie. Sketch, though. So, while we were watching the movie, Sketch was very sketchy. Pun intended, on the set. So apparently he got accused by two people of sexual harassment.
Oh, wow.
And I believe he copped up to one of them, and the other one he was like, I've never met her, or I don't remember engaging with her, or whatever, but, like, he was very problematic on set. So he was not a good boy while making this movie. Speaking of the music, though, the music, I think, is what carried this movie, for sure. I mean, anytime that a song did come off, I was like, okay, I'm back in it now. This is why I like it, and I remember it. And it's funny, so what I have here, it says that it made a number 74 on Billboard of top 200 album charts, and charted at number 40 on the top R&B and hip-hop album. I bought this soundtrack, by the way. I bought it. It went gold in 1996, 3 years after the movie was released. So, I mean, even though the movie wasn't received well, everyone really liked the music. What was it about the music that kind of, like, stood out for you? It didn't seem, like, too cheesy or anything?
No, and I think it ties into, I grew up Catholic, and I think that's maybe a part of why that movie, like, was so relatable, because even in the first movie, there was so much Catholicism just built into just backgrounds and characters and all those things. And so there's such a clear relatability to it. And then you have this other piece of just this soulful, just heart-wrenching music. And it just, I don't know, it was something about just the music and how it was a very relatable story. I mean, I'm a big person who likes to say cliches are cliche for a reason. Yeah, we make fun of them, but in all honesty, most cliches are there for a reason because they're a very time-tested principle. And I feel like these songs are kind of a mirror of that, of these just classic time-tested ways in which you touch one's heart or make someone feel good or get someone through a tough time. And I think all the songs in that movie had some element of that.
Mm-hmm. Why do you guys believe that Lauryn Hill's character had a problem with Mary Clance or just even staying in the class? Like, what was she? I mean, she clearly loves to sing. What? Why was she so against just kind of following the rules? You know, once she put her foot down, like, it's time to learn. And she was just totally against it. Like, why do you think she had such a huge problem? I mean, the only thing I can think of is, like, she gets so much of authority at home, she wasn't trying to have it in class. But I didn't really understand what her issue was.
That's a great point. And I think what I admire is that you're trying to get to introduce logic.
I'm trying. I really want to.
Because it wouldn't be a movie if there wasn't some kind of drama. That's the only answer that I can.
Well, I mean, they tried to raise the stakes so much through this, and I just didn't understand. Like, everybody had a problem for no reason. And so I'm like, well, what was her deal? And then, like, she even brought up the fact, oh, you know, I live in this neighborhood. It's not the land of opportunity. You know, we can't dream here and all this. So I don't know. Maybe she just didn't want to put herself in a position to be happy or something. I don't know.
Yeah, because even like I was thinking the initial answer to your question was maybe her mother reminded her of Whoopi Goldberg, like another black woman telling her what to do and not being able to do it.
Yeah.
But then I go back to your point of, but there's still, there's not enough, there wasn't enough reason because even with her friends, they were like, hey, why quit in choir? I don't want to talk about it. Hey, when she like came to say, I'm quitting, she was like, I'm quitting and I can't tell you why and walked away. I'm like, it's a really easy
My mom said no.
That
yeah,
was a really easy
exactly.
answer.
Exactly. So, that's what I was so thinking too.
I'm even trying to incorporate pride into this. And it's like, do you not want to admit that your mom made you do something? I mean, I really don't understand why she
But it
would
seems
rather.
Like she would want to blame her mom and not look like it like she's you know, acting a fool or something.
Yeah.
Well, we hope she comes through. I know when I was a little kid, I was like, oh no, she's not gonna go.
She has to change your mind. She has to find a way there.
So, Vincent, what are some of the like your favorite parts? Lines, anything like that? What I mean, you were over there just living your life, just remembering and being all nostalgic. What was some of the biggest parts you liked about this?
And this is similar to that question of what are things people don't like, and I'm gonna say it, but if you wanna be somebody, you want to go somewhere, you better wake up and pay attention. I know it's so stupid. It is so stupid, but whatever it is just resonates with me. It's like, to me, it just simply means if you want something, go after and get it. And that's really it. Like, go get it. And it's simple, but I like simple stuff at times. And that line just really just always like touches me, and I don't know why.
I did like the opening number.
The opening number is amazing. Because
as anyone who knows me knows, I love a 60s girl group. Mm. So I did enjoy the opening number. I enjoy the fact that Jennifer Lewis, they brought her back, even though she didn't have a line. I appreciated that she was there. Mm-hmm. I also...
Continuity.
I also, while I didn't love the song they were singing, I did like the scene where the nuns were performing for the seniors and the students, just because that was like the one taste of the original movie.
Yeah.
And I liked seeing it was the same women from the first movie, and I liked seeing those cute old ladies, you know.
They kept it modern, you know, they obviously got hip with it. And updated their, you know, their performance and whatnot. Yeah, it was really nice to see the old crew. I mean, why have a sequel if you're not gonna, you know, have like the ladies that we watched before?
But I mean, again, that's kind of what made, I think, the first one fun and funny was the kind of juxtaposition of like these different worlds colliding. And this one, you know, to see a bunch of teenagers singing hip hop isn't hilarious. You know, even if they're good at singing and performing, it's not funny.
I love the reunion moment between Dolores and Superior. You know, Maggie Smith comes in with her smile. She no longer, you know, hates her anymore, and it's just like old times, and they're playing the, you know, the cute music when they're reuniting. is really cute. And then I find out in this movie, like, these nuns lie a lot throughout this whole
thing. For no reason.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you supposed to be doing all of this lying? I mean, down to the almost to the end of the movie, literally lies coming out of their mouths.
For no reason.
I just thought that was hilarious.
That's a great point.
But, I mean, of course, the music. Once Oh Happy Day started playing, I was like, the la-la-las, I was like, wow, I remember this so much. So, back in Washington, my middle school actually adapted this movie as their, like, year musical.
Oh, wow.
In our school. And so, God, it was so cheesy. But they did a full concert. It was at night, and it was all based on this movie and the music from it. So I went to that, and that was crazy. I mean, but that's how big this movie was back then. Like, schools had a reason to, like, bring it in and have everybody learn from it and do their little, I mean, who knows? Maybe they got a passing grade just for doing the whole thing like they did in the movie. But yeah, our school adapted this, so that was kind of fun to watch too back in the day. Their dance moves were horrible. Yeah. I will say that. But it was still cool. But Joyful and all of those other performances at the competition were great. And by the way, and I said this before, I love Joyful, and I'm so glad our stars got to win, but they were not the best group at the end.
Again,
I'm sorry.
I agree with that.
There were some groups that was taking people to church.
Yeah.
I would like, and you know what's funny, that Send Me a Revival song or whatever wasn't even on the soundtrack, and I bought it just for that. And it never appeared, and I could never get it. So the only rendition I got was from the movie.
Wow.
But when that came on, I was like, yeah, this is what I remember going to church, right?
Yeah.
So what would you think about, like, do you think this movie could work at all today?
Nope.
Yeah.
No. This is just something from our childhood, right?
Well, this movie is one of those great examples of a time where we were able to get away with things that could never get away, be done with today, because we were too aware and too critical on the nuances around decision making and moving. So, you know, very similar to like Martin, the TV show, could never work today because there's too many problematic things in that show. I think this movie is the same way, where you have, you know, Frank K, you know, pretty much appropriating another culture,
very appropriate,
neglecting himself at all. And you have all these, like, really stereotypical people in this movie that I don't think had any depth beyond Lauryn Hill's character. Yeah, she was the only character who really had depth outside of that. And everything else was just so, like, stereotypical. And it was like someone in a writing studio made a decision on, this is what teenagers look like in San Francisco. And by the way, as a kid, I don't think I realized it was San Francisco. I thought it looked like New York or the Northeast somewhere, because now that I know it was in San Francisco, it makes even less sense of, like, how this movie could, like, work today. And it's just, I don't know, it's just, there's too many, like, problems with how they just portray each character.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it was a little odd to me when Lauryn Hill says there's no opportunities in San Francisco? Really?
That's her mom's doing right there, just keeping her locked up, not letting her see the world at all, let alone the city.
Yeah, it was a very kind of, just sort of a stereotypical portrayal of troubled teens. Mm-hmm. And yet there was never any mention of any actual problem. Like, nobody ever said anything about drugs or anything. They're just, they don't like school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or they don't like his class, it'll be a bird course. But again, going back to, like, the problem I have with this strong gangster vibe they had initially was, as soon as Sister Mary Clarence said, I'm going to give y'all Fs, everyone's like, whoa, 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 let me sit my butt down and stay in this class. Right.
So they weren't as tough as they all thought.
Exactly.
Really. Yeah. So there are some critics out there that may say that Whoopi sort of phoned this performance in, maybe a little bit on autopilot. Do you think she gave it her all as she did in the first one? Granted, the material may not have been there, but yeah, do we believe that Whoopi did somewhat of a good job keeping us entertained? Was she still funny, just like she was in the first one? What do you guys think of her portrayal in this?
So I'll say this. Whoopi, during that era, was one of the best actresses in Hollywood. Her facial expressions, her
alone,
looks.
Yes.
I mean, they said so much. Again, it's hard to judge her, because the material and the lines were just so bad, but from just a quality of acting, I don't think she phoned it in. I just think she did the best she could with those like shitty ass lines.
Yeah,
I agree. I thought she actually, there were times where I watched her and I thought, she's really trying.
She's like, selling that.
Like, it's not necessarily working, but, you know, much like Sandra Bullock in Miss Congeniality 2, Reese Witherspoon in Legally Blonde 2, Red, White, and Blonde.
Those
sometimes
are great.
You just have to do what you have to do.
Those are great examples. Chick. Miss Congeniality 2, my God.
Armed and Fabulous.
Jesus, I would...
I mean, there's a long history of people making really awful sequels to really good comedies.
To really good comedies. I love that first one, man.
But it's hard to recapture the magic.
Yeah. Okay, so with that being said, there's still like an audience out there that wants her to do a third one. Anytime she gets interviewed anywhere, they always ask, will there be a Sister Act 3? You know, they don't ask for Ghost 2. They don't ask for Jumpin' Jack Flash 2.
Although I really would love a Ghost 2. Back in the ghosty.
Yeah. But everybody, for some reason, thinks that a third one needs to happen. I don't know what it would be about.
It's because people are dumb. And people think that sequels to things are a good idea. And most of the time, they're not. Read Legally Blonde 2, Miss Congeniality 2. Sequels are very rarely as good as the original, and I think that they should just leave well enough alone.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think? Would you like to see another... Do you think there's a story in there if people really think about it?
I don't think there's another story in there. Just, and especially with, like, the way where the church is today, I just don't... I don't think there's a way to make a storyline involving the church at all playful.
Yeah.
Now, if she went to go do, like, a Girl Scout troop, in some place, I don't know, something like that. It had to be an entirely different like concept. It could not be around the church. Also, too, I mean, I hate to say it, but like a lot of those women in that original too, they're all gone. They don't
know what the So when this was brought up back in 2013, you know, like the idea of a sequel was really revving up. Like they were thinking about getting director. Like they really were like, Whoopi, would you do this? And initially she was like, no, because a lot of the original women are gone.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, like what would it look like if half of them, you know, wouldn't be able to be in the movie. And so she expressed a lot of doubt about what the sequel would even be about. And then it kind of went away for a little bit. And then in 2017, she sort of like, you know, I kind of want to go back and do it. You know, like it sounds cool. I mean, I think with a good story, maybe she just got a little bit more confidence with it. They were thinking about hiring some writers. What do I have written here? Like Regina Y. Hicks. I don't know exactly who she is. And Karen Geis. So they were hired to write a script for Sister Act 3. And this was established in 2018. So if they do make one, there is a possibility we may see it on Disney Plus. So I don't know. I want to see Whoopi in a movie, period. I still think that she's got it, and if they give her the right material, I think it would be fun to see her. In a movie like Sister Act, I don't know where they would go with this, especially for today's audience. Like, who would watch that today?
I would accept, this is the, okay, you know what I'd accept? I'd accept, and maybe I've already done it, but a Sister Act Broadway. I could see...
No, they've done it, and I saw it, and it was great.
Okay, then that's what I would accept.
Yeah, no, we talked about this when we talked about Sister Act. Mm-hmm. I saw the Broadway show of Sister Act. It was a musical. It took place in the 70s, and it was all disco. And so in that version, she was a disco star, and it was great, and I would love to see them do a film version of that.
It's not out of the realm for them to take a Broadway movie and or Broadway show and make it into a movie and not base it on the original. So yeah. I wouldn't mind that at all, and it does give it a little bit of a fresh look. I didn't get to see the show, but you think that would work, even taking place in the 70s?
I think so. I know... Whoopi Goldberg talked to ABC about doing a live musical.
Oh, perfect. Okay. I'd be down for that.
ABC said no.
Oh, cool.
I read about that in the big book that came out about The View, that was one thing that came up in her, I think, in her contract negotiations or whatever. She was really pushing for ABC to do a live musical of Sister Act. And they didn't.
That's the best part of the musical, was the music. And that's why, if it's the musical, sign me up.
That's too bad. All right. Well, before we close up and rate our film after this rewatch, any other notes, any other memories, something you want to share about the movie?
How the hell is winning a choir competition going to save a school? That made no sense at all.
I talked to you about this. The only thing I can think of is just like any school that is sports related. You know, when you bring trophies in, that gives them a reason to put money into it because they're spilling out kids with talent. So if they're showing a good example of like this school is actually teaching these kids to win and do all of the stuff, then there you have it.
But if the issue is they don't have money, choirs don't... Like, football brings in money.
So I... Well, yeah,
choirs don't bring in money.
I mean, there's obviously a lack of sponsorship. And, of course, our villain of the movie obviously just wanted to sit on his ass and play golf. So he did everything he could to get the school closed so he can just bow out of his job. But more information that was just left out that we didn't get.
And the whole thing with the administrator guy who's so opposed, and then they all travel down to Hollywood, and then the other guys are also opposed, but then they turn around, and then now they're trying to lock him in a closet with a salami. No, like, again, this is just examples of why this movie makes no sense. Period.
All right, well, let's rate this film. So how many Bibles do you give Sister Act 2?
What are the qualities in which you're ranking this on? I just want to make sure I'm aware.
Yeah, so I usually do 1 through 5, 5 being the, you know, the best, 1 being, you know, the worst.
I got to give it a Book of Revelations, 2.5 Bibles.
2.5 Bibles. All right, what about you, Noah?
Can I give it like half a Bible? Is it bad to give it no Bibles?
My goodness.
I'll give it half a Bible.
Okay.
For the music.
I didn't say anything about the music, but I didn't even like the music.
Oh, too bad.
We lost Noah all around.
Oh, man, we sure did.
I mean, it was fine. It's not like, here's the thing. I did not listen to popular music until about 1999. And I hate to say this, but I don't even really know who Lauryn Hill is, which is my bad, but.
Edit that out.
So even the music was just not, it was fine.
No, it's fair. That's fair. So I mean, yeah, hearing the music definitely took me back. I had smiles on my face as I was singing along. This movie, you know, I still was entertained. It was not as funny as it used to be from what I remember. So that was definitely problematic. I'm giving this a solid 2 Bibles out of 5, and I hate to bring it down so low because I own this movie. I bought it, and I don't know, for some reason I just feel that part 1 and 2 are just a package deal. But Sister Act is a standalone movie. It can be watched without the acknowledgement of the second, but again, it's just again more Whoopi, and I still enjoyed watching her on there too, so I give it a 2. Yeah.
Fair.
All right, well, that is going to do it for our rewatch of Sister Act 2. We hope you enjoy going down memory lane watching this. It is currently on Disney Plus right now if you would like to view it. And thank you all for listening. Vincent, you are gem.
Yes, thank you so much for letting me be on today. If you want to follow me, I'm going to be launching my blog called thegayblacktraveler.com, or you can follow me on Instagram or Facebook.
Under Gay Black Traveler.
Gay Black Traveler.
All right, all right. Noah, thank you so much for being on the show once again.
Thank you. You can follow me at Noah Barnes. That's at Noah, NOAHBARNES.
Yeah, not to be confused with BARNS.
Not to be confused with BARNS, because while that's the correct way to spell the word, it's not the correct way to spell my name.
And of course, Movie Geek and Proud is Movie Geek and Proud, all one word, on Instagram. On Twitter, we are at MGNP Podcast. And we will have another episode coming for you very, very soon. All right, signing off. Thanks for listening, everyone.